So, James, the last two episodes, we covered some pretty dark or alarming material, you could say, that might uncover or indicate the path the health and fitness industry, particularly as it relates to youth and fitness, is currently on.
Mm-hmm.
So today we want to try and course correct a little bit and maybe inject some hope, positivity, and some direction in terms of levers that we can pull and things that we can control as those, well, now four P's, policymakers, professionals, parents and peers, that can have a genuine impact on young people and help them to find that health and fitness autonomy. So today we're going to be talking about the coach's oath, which is an idea, I guess you could say, was birthed from James's course on Learn RX, which if you haven't seen it, I highly encourage you to watch and listen to it. Or if you're not in the LearnRx ecosystem, if you're a coach or someone who's just genuinely interested in health and fitness and education, then it's an absolute wealth of knowledge. And we can link to that in the show notes as well. And
yeah, it's called, what's it called? Youth activity?
Youth physical activity.
Youth physical activity, YPA, yep.
Yeah. So James really distilled from his knowledge and experience five key principles for anyone wanting to have an impact on young people. Like we said, falling in love with physical expression, which, and I'll just summarize them very quickly, are teach to learn, disciplined role model, or be a disciplined role model, make it a family thing, to do it because they can, and to make each experience memorable. So we're going to dive into each one in more detail. James, I'll let you discuss each principle first, and then we can expand on anything we need to and unpack that a little bit more after. But first, James, I thought it might be beneficial to understand, I guess, where you came up with these first five principles. Who's it for? And what effect did you intend or hope that it would have for people who engage with it or listen to it or saw that course?
Yeah, I think it was probably just a contemplation on, you know, what kind of things can I do and be a part of that would actually make some impact as I define success, you know? And because it's very easy for me just to sit in a room and think about things, you know, and come up with models and write things, et cetera. But then I look around and I'm like, well, who am I talking to every day? You know, and I'm talking to coaches, you know, and whether I like it or not, or whether even they like it or not, that's our communication line. You know, it's me and coaches. Let's just say it's all coaches together. So that was the inspiration or the starting point for it, is to say, you know, if I'm going to do anything about this, you know, I would consider this podcast another one of those arms of doing something about it, right? And I appreciate your time in being able to do those things with me on this slow moving push of ideas out to the universe. I just thought that you want to start with what is in your periphery. So it goes back to saying, like, if you want to make an impact, where do you start? And it's the thing of like, well, be the change. Well, okay, I'm a parent. I have children. You know, I'm acting as the best as I can with good intentions, a role model for my kids. And then, so what's right next to me that I could like act upon, that I could actually have impact? And it's coaches. And I thought that if giving these coaches a very simple idea, as opposed to the usual, Daniel, which is, you know, what do we do about obesity for kids? Or what do we, you know, what do we do about ACL injuries in young females? Or what do we do about the female athlete triad? Or what do we do about overzealous parents? Or what do we do about sports specialization? Do you see all the story? Like that's all the literature and time that's spent in youth training, right? And so I thought, how about we back up and say, you know, what does the coach need? You know, what does the coach need to start with as an initial, you know, beginner starting point of these things that they could hang on to. We'll call them, I guess, again, pillars or a template, a guidelines, mottos, mantras, right? What did I call them? The five.
Well, those principles.
Principles. Really? Yeah. I think I labeled them principles or yeah. Some anyways, these things that you could just like say, okay, you know, when I walk into the room, and I think I gave this in the course, but when you walk into that room, you know, every day, you are having like a significant impact on these young people, a significant impact. I can't pause long enough to make people recognize just how powerful you could be as an adult with your effect on a young person for a couple of minutes in a day. If you think you're not effective for a couple of minutes, you're sorely mistaken. So let me just tell you, you have massive impact. So if you're walking into the room as a coach, I think these are good things to kind of use as a base support before you even get into the games and the play and the idea. And before any of these P's, you know, the pros, policymakers, parents or peers, you know, if they're in that position outside of pros, you know, they should think about that. Think about, with your ideas of, and I'll go through them very quickly, with the ideas of teaching to learn, you know, the emphasis on to learn, the emphasis not on teaching. You know, I probably could have put it in different language to help that, but it's you want these young people with the actions of the things you're passing on for them to like download that information. You know, secondly, you want to, in all your actions, be disciplined in what you believe in. You know, so if you expect to walk in late with a rock star energy drink, how do you propose, right? It's got nothing to do with morality relative to the balance. How do you propose to invoke this inspiration with those young people around drinking water and developing energy from good sleep, right? And I hope people pick that up with the being late and the energy rock star drink. You know, so be a disciplined role model where all those young people, whether you want to take on that responsibility or not, they look up to you. They look up to you for guidance because, which we can go on, we've talked about before, they're not getting it anywhere else. Third, when I say family thing, recognize that it's all the things connected around that person, which we have discussed previously, that makes the whole snowball work, right? So you have to recognize that, their perception as a kid in how you're going to operate this whole movement experience and physical expression experience is not just you and the kid, right? It's got to do with what's happening in their environment, what's happening at home, what's happening in the school, what's happening. So that's really got to do with the environment. Number four, do it because you can. That basically, you want to, as in 2023, especially, or for here forward for the next long period of time, it's a reactionary thing that you have to have in your pocket simply because most generations now, like two or three generations deep, they can't even comprehend that you would do exercise or movement just because we're capable of doing it. And so what I mean, do it because you can, it means that you want to be doing all this physical expression with these young people. Sure, there's going to be tests or scores for free throws or the amount of time you're spent outside or whatever, right? Sure, you know, you can give me that with it. It's a good mesh. But you have to have this intention that we're doing this, you know, every kid remembers, you know, at the end of every day, and they need to be reminded of this daily, by the way, just in case you don't think so. It's, you know, you got to ask that question indirectly. Why are we doing this? Right. As if you just like blew the whistle and stopped everyone. Right. And you want everyone screaming out because we can, coach. And then you're like, okay. So you want to embed, whether they like it or not, you want that 8-year-old young female who has got this perception all of a sudden, right, of like, wow, I'm judged based upon my body and my size and the way I look. And there's some things going on in my head, you know, and you want her getting that initial reaction of like, wow, I thought we did movement because dot, 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 lose weight because mom told me I needed to, because I see my dad being a crazy fitness zealot in the gym. Like, you know, she sees this new change in it, right? And then lastly, you want to embed these, let's just call it, I'll leave it short. We'll call it positive feelings post session, right? You want all of them leaving with not this like, oh, I got my ass kicked, or, oh my gosh, you know, my legs are so sore and coach didn't listen to me when I was doing, you know, no, you want them having this moment of reflection post movement scenario or post experience where they're like, damn, that was so much fun. Right. And they don't even know Daniel, right? They don't even know what went on, really. You know, if you were to question them, you know, how did that thing happen? You know, 30 minutes in when you're doing, and they're like, geez, I don't know. So you could tell they're in this, like, this enjoyment flow, positive, you know, environment, breathing and working and struggling and challenging. And then at the end of it, you press stop and they're all, you almost hear this like, aw, you know, so that's what you want. And that's a memorable thing. So use those five. And what I was hoping to do today, maybe you have some questions on each one of them or some changes. I was hoping, as I didn't mention this to you on our email back and forth for a starter for this, but I was hoping to maybe improve language, or maybe add or subtract, Daniel, or maybe do a little, I'm of course, as you know me, I'm not afraid of, I know we went from 3 P's to 4 P's, right? We didn't cry. So, you know, I'm up for a little bit of a shift in it. Do you got any questions based upon those five or some things to lead into for each one?
No, I thought exactly we would do the same thing, unpack them, refine them, debate them. Okay. So super. I think it's important to note, and like you said at the beginning, with so much information out there now, it becomes very, very convoluted and confusing as to where, if you're a parent, policymaker, professional, peer, how you engage with these young people in order to have the most impact. And so we get lost in focusing on, you know, sets, reps, rest, scheme, the most popular exercises, the most recent studies, the myths in the gym that surround youth and weight training, as an example, that we are forgetting to even just reflect on how we show up in these settings and the impact just that has and the energy we're putting out to young people and what that's signaling and the messages that they're taking in. And I think these serve as those first principles to guide behaviors and guide actions now that you go into a setting where you know that you're going to have an impact. Because like you said, if you don't think that you are very sorely mistaken, because they are looking at every little thing, whether it's consciously or subconsciously, that are molding and shaping the things that they value and the things that they believe, and then in turn, how they behave. So if anything, this is just a great foundation from which that helps guide behaviors and actions when we're engaging with young people. So I think people should use this as a bit of a toolkit as well.
You know, what I was thinking there is probably we need to open up maybe some options that you could also think of. I thought of a couple, Daniel, that is like, where are we actually talking about? You know, and so I would take a stab at it and say, you know, who this is going to benefit the most. Doesn't mean that, you know, you may not have a, let's call it a CrossFit gym owner with a CrossFit kids class who this is not going to benefit. It would benefit, right? Because it would change up their, like, probably the intentional thing. You know, maybe, you know, a reimagination of memorable experiences, maybe that, you know, so to give credit really to CrossFit Kids program or something that's, you know, out there saying that, because I do think they have a discipline role model. I do think they keep it family style. They could certainly look at the intentional differences, do it because you can, and then have each experience more memorable as opposed to suffering. But I was thinking about, you know, I was trying to think of that, because the young 8-year-old female that I explained in a private setting, it's not always the case, but she could also be involved in a private dance group, right, in their local community. Now, I'm still categorizing all that as a movement experience, right? So by saying that, maybe your brain too and everyone else's can open up, like, who are we actually talking about that should take on these five principles, right? And I would say in most cases, correct me if I'm wrong, it's probably the PE teacher. It's probably in a public school setting of a PE teacher who could take this on and benefit the most, right? And now I'll finish with this other opportunity. Think about this. It's also Coach Will, who's my daughter's soccer coach, right? And Chloe's 14. It would be also beneficial for him, right? Now, as a sport coach, you have a lot more things going on politically and et cetera with regards to what you're doing, but it wouldn't hurt to have these like things stuck in your pocket. So when, like, I saw this young girl leave the field Saturday, and Will put out his hand to high five her, like, good effort, and she didn't hit his hand, and she just went and sat on the bench and sulked, right? So I watched after, there was no like conversation after, there was no healing. There was nothing like there's so that you could see there's something missing, right? In the intentions and the attitude and something that's there. So I think it could benefit that group too, but what's your thoughts on who would benefit the most for this particular adult and young person principles that this old adult could use in the situation?
My mind definitely goes to the physical education teacher and the coach, because there's a far more defined box in which they engage with the child, in that they have a syllabus or a curriculum that they're confined to. Maybe they know that they get a limited amount of time. So they're automatically now trying to manage time, manage a lot of different people, managing their expectation as a teacher to the school. And now you can quickly see how they prioritize just the way that they show up, engage, and all those really subtle details can now get missed. But the cumulative effect of that can actually be quite large. So one thing I also like, teach to learn, you know, if we modify it as well, I think another key element is, yeah, we want to teach so that there's learning from the child, but I think it's reciprocal as well. And that as coaches, we should be far more open to learning ourselves as to how these young people are responding to my teaching. So another great, I think it's Nathan Parnham actually, who I had this discussion with, was, you know, let's use the PE teacher or the weight room coach at a school as an example. If you want feedback on how your teaching is, you know, scheduling, and we've spoken about this before, James, scheduling training blocks or sessions, or coming up with your own assessment protocol where the kids are writing their own programs.
Yeah.
And see what's, you know, you're going to get a very clear reflection of what you have actually taught them based off what they're putting in inside of a program.
Yeah.
And I think there's teach to learn from the coach's perspective or the teacher's perspective, but that's also reciprocal in getting that feedback from those younger people. And I think far too often we take that authoritarian approach where it's like, no, I'm the, you have the authority, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't be getting that feedback where you can improve, refine your practice.
Yeah. I think that probably also falls under what need to be expanded on what a discipline role model means. Because the discipline role model also makes that assumption, Daniel, right? That you are going to be disciplined in your character. You're going to be disciplined in your heterodox opinions. You're going to be disciplined in your open-mindedness, right? You're a free thinker. You want to give that off, right? We're a free thinker. But you're also, to your point, you're also not going to just allow all thought just to move through the room. Right. So there's a balance there. And that's, I get what you're saying. You want to err on the side of being authoritarian. I agree with you. But that, for example, I'll give you an example. This is where some people may get a little, stuck, because I'll just say it. Like, why doesn't all, like we talked about, why doesn't the area in which young people are going to move, why don't you have all the movements up? Why don't you have punch, hang, step, sit, and lift, right? Why don't you have them all up, right? And this comes back to my constant argument is like, oh, well, you know, well, some people, James, do bicep curls. And, you know, some people don't want to do weightlifting. And you see, they immediately just jump into this, like, your arguments against what I would, so see my point there is that when you do pick the movements though, Daniel, I hope you get what I'm saying. People think it's a construct of authoritarianism. It's like, oh, it's only those movements. Well, offline, yeah, I'll argue it is only those movements, but you're at least back to the point, teach to learn as a discipline role model. I'm telling you, right? Yeah, we're free movers in here, but these are the things I need you to leave with, right? I need you to come back the next time. And your homework was watch a movie or watch something in which a physical expression of all the movements were done. Do you see that? So they're going to come back and now report that back to you. What does that do? You're teaching to learn. You're downloading the aspects of that one particular unit. But you see what I did there? I stuck to the patterns. Like I just stuck to them. I'm not making it everywhere. It's like, no, here's it. And so my wife and my daughter and I watched Creed 3 last night. Background story, I'm a deep Rocky fan. So I've been, you know, watching the whole thing all the way through. My daughter loved it. And we talked about that, right? We talk about it all the time. She knows what punching is, right? And she would not be like, oh yeah, you know, my dad teaches me punching, you know, to her friends. No, she would say it's a punch, but there's multiple ways to do it. You know, like handstand holds is a punch. You know, dips is a punch. Dumbbell bench press is a punch. Single arm overhead. You see what I'm saying? Like, so now my daughter is teaching her friends, right, to learn and download that punch. Sorry to be lengthy on that, but that ties in the first and second with regards to opening the language up in teaching to learn and being a disciplined role model for that.
No, I can speak to two things that come straight to mind. One, albeit it is in a performance setting, but I really loved how this coach, Ollie, it's a major league rugby league team here in New York. In their preseason, what he did.
And his name is Ollie.
Ollie Richardson. Yeah, I can send you he's a British strength and conditioning coach.
No, I knew he was all, just, I knew he was I knew he was British. I have a number of friends in the UK that are Ollie. So I was like, guaranteed he's Britain rugby coach.
And I'm not sure if he shifted this during competition, but when I was there catching up with him during a preseason session, in order to reduce monotony and keep it as engaging as fun and fun. But what it subliminally did, or I guess probably intentionally did, was educate the players on how to curate and manage their own sessions, because he couldn't be all places at once. And what he had was essentially he provided the structure of the training throughout the week. So let's say Monday was, hip dominant exercise with a upper body push, followed by accessory work. Next session was knee dominant with upper body pull. But then there was lists on the wall of all, like, going from compound big multi-joint lifts down to isolated accessory, and they could literally just drag and drop. And he gave them, you know,
awesome,
the reps, set rep progression. And then they just would go in on select days and just pick the session. So if they're like, you know, oh, I don't really want to do a Romanian deadlift today. Okay, great. You can do a hip thrust. You can do a, and I thought, wow, that's actually, whilst in a performance setting, is something really interesting that you could apply in a youth setting where you're giving the structure, I guess, to that point where you need to have some authoritarianism, you could call it. You need to guide the ship in some way, but now you're allowing that freedom to express in ways that they're interested. But now you're also creating an exercise library of all the types of ways they can perform a movement, where it's now like, oh, okay, no, I'm doing this exercise is prescribed. So that means exercise A, B, C, and D are off limits. They may be not safe. And that may seem bizarre to someone listening, but that's genuinely how people will think. It's like, well, it's not in my program. I've never done it. I probably can't do it. And it's like, I don't know if that's the correct way that we want to start to yeah, I don't know if that's
I love it.
The values that we want to impart on young people. It's like, I'm really interested in this movement. Okay, we're probably, in terms of a continuum, that movement, we're here and this movement's probably up here, but let's break it down. Let's go through it. Let's see what it looks like. And then give them the stepping stones in order to move towards that.
Yep.
Because that flows into make it memorable.
Yeah, I love that. It's a little bit of that area where I'm empathetic to the sport performance model, as it ties into like vitality, because in that case, indirectly, those athletes are going to leave the sporting atmosphere over time and they're going to have the patterns embedded in them. So that's a positive thing. We also seem to think, which if no one picked it up, you know, that's what Daniel was throwing down there. We think that 8-year-olds, for example, can't pick up these things that teach to learn that they download that they could use for the rest of their life, right? We think, you know, and to make my point, you know, when I was basically teaching a phys ed class, grade 10, 11, and 12, because it was still sport dominated. And I was the best and I still wanted to do the class. And Mr. Soper was like, oh, this is a waste of time for you. And I was like, well, you know, I could do some teaching of stuff and I could, you know, and I was doing it because honestly, I was bored if I just participated in whatever was the class. My whole point being is that we seem to think that that 8-year-old or let's call it 10-year-old grade 4, 5, 6 can't get to the point by the time they're in that movement session, you know, in grade 10, 11, and 12. Do you really need a teacher? Do you see? It's like, oh, we got to have them learning something. It's like, you really think they can't master that? Do you get my point? Is like, we think, oh, we can't give up too much when they're 9 or 10 years of age. We can't have them knowing these patterns that they're going to do for the rest of their life. You know, God help us if they're going to be teaching their friends about it in the community. You know, I think that's what always comes up, Daniel, when you speak about that. Is like, why not just give that up? Like, allow them to your point, the coach wasn't there. Design your own programs, right? We think it's crazy that kid after 5 years of school is going to come in and the coach is going to be like, you know what to do. We're doing full body patterns today of resistance. You know, your job when you weren't here was to come up with a new movement, right? So go and show me what it is. Do you see my point? And we're like, oh, can't have that. You got to have power. You got to have control. You got to have testing. You see what I'm saying? So this is the, it goes back to our point we made previously on this subjective atmosphere that has to come in. This creative, imaginative, subjective atmosphere that has to be inside of this. And, you know, you just got to inspire people. You got to inspire young people to do that. And to your point on the back end of that being lengthily explaining it in a different way, you got to let the leash off, right? You got to let them like come up with their own patterns. And we haven't even discussed like the aerobic continuum or sustainability practices. Like, gosh, that's endless in its possibilities for group scenarios and movements, et cetera. So.
And I'll give you an example of what it looks like on the other end. I did this last week because I play a sport, and where I go to practice, there's a fantastic gym. And just for time's sake, I lift before I go into doing my session. And I've had that many people come up and ask me, because I spend a lot of the time, you know, doing bigger lifts and whatnot for reasons we can go into, but they asked me why I spend so much time. I had multiple people say, oh, I've noticed, I've seen you in a couple of times and you spend a lot of time just on the Olympic lifting platform and using a barbell. And then I stopped and just paid attention to what the boys were doing and what the girls were doing. And again, I could get into go down a very rabbit hole and I could get called out for this, but I just wanted to see the natural selection of exercises that males and females, I was assuming, were choosing to do in a gym. And I don't believe it's because they'd really thought it out. It was because that they'd seen that these exercises meant that it achieved a certain aesthetic. And I counted it. So there was 15 males and 3 females from what I could see. Every single one was on a cable machine, either doing some sort of a bicep curl, a tricep extension, or a lateral raise. So we could say biceps, triceps, shoulders. And the females were doing, they were grouped together doing a workout on their phone, but like a lot of like fire hydrant body weight exercises on the floor. And I just thought, and there was no one. There's like four platforms with barbells, and I was the only one using it. And I just thought that was so interesting, because it's like, I don't think people are doing these exercises because, well, that's all that they knew. That is their reference point. And this is a group of my peers. And I was like, there's that many people have asked me that many questions that they genuinely don't know. Like, I don't know if they've ever engaged with a barbell. I don't know if they've ever been taught, you know, like they're confined to such a small area of the gym that they've never been taught, or I don't know, given the freedom to play around. So now in their old age, and a gym can be a very intimidating environment where if you don't feel like you're competent to use a certain piece of equipment, you just never engage with it. And I just was like, happened enough that I started to look around and I was like, wow, like based off natural selection, and I'm guessing via social media and what males believe is the aesthetic to work towards, and how do you achieve that in a gym? It's like, wow, you're so restricted. And it's so, I just thought that was such an interesting observation in being in a, I guess, more of a public gym environment.
Yeah, but it's an honest observation. And I think one that happens at a really high rate and high level. So you're not, you're speaking about it. I think just to give knowledge to our listeners and everyone that that's the actual reality. What you just gave there was actually what is happening. Now, besides the fact that it's sad, like it is that the, you know, first of all, I guess not first of all, but it's not sad in the case that they're probably doing harm. I mean, if you look at it in a big picture scenario,
no,
they're doing resistance. Okay.
There's nothing wrong with what they're doing.
Resistance, that's all good. Right. But again, to the point, and I'm not going to assume what the age average was, but let's just say that all of those on average 16-year-old males and females, why didn't they have access when they were 6, 7, 8 years of age to the concepts of patterns, right? Why didn't they? Because it is at those formative years where it trumps culture and it trumps society. Do you know what I'm saying? So in a far off land somewhere, OPT was one of those places in Aspen Drive. You would walk into our old OPT and people would be watching 10-year-olds, you know, doing resistance, right? And another 10-year-old would come from, let's call it the broken society or a school or a global gym, be like, my gosh, they must be so embarrassed out there doing full body resistance training. And they're like, no, actually that they know all those particular things. So, yeah, there's, to your point where you were trying to put your finger on it, but let's go back to the areas. There's three areas that make that what it is and what you experienced. It's a biological thing. I've talked about that previously, right? It's a biological thing. You can read the mating mind, sex brain differences, sex stereotype differences back in biology, evolutionary biological stuff, male and female. Just read that. It's a biological thing. Secondly, culture has a monstrosity. Again, all that we see in our world of fitness today for 99.9% of everyone in participation is downstream from culture, right? So just realize that. And then lastly, yeah, there's these innate, immutable sex stereotype things that these particular groups will participate in, right? And again, to my point, they're still somewhat beneficial, but if I was to do an upgrade on it, I'd like those guys to do some squatting and I'd like the girls to start doing push-up, pull-up progressions, you know, to balance it all out. But it should make sense to us that they're doing it based upon these immutable sex stereotype characteristics, along with culture, along with biology, that it is unfortunate that they're kind of stuck in it. But I want us to keep, you know, to try to stay on what we were discussing. It's too bad that in an educational setting where a coach can't give them that information so they can go into the gym. This is what I would love, Daniel, is for that female to go over to the males and say, hey, you know, you guys should learn how to properly squat and do proper lunges. Do you know what I mean? Like indirectly, that's my girls, what they do in a gym setting. But it's like, Hannah goes over and makes fun of the boys and does more pull-ups than they can. But besides the fact, like, that's what I want to see is this balanced, you know, head to toe effect of knowing patterns and then teaching others. And how did we get there? We got there because a coach took those five things in their mind and walked into the educational atmosphere and let loose, right? And just said, hey, this is what the truth is. This is what you need to know. And you cannot ask me about this anymore. The only up effect from here forward is your learning, right? We got the base principles. It's just your learning in your creativity and your imagination as to how this is going to play out. That's the future.
Yeah. And I think even just going back to that teach to learn, using that as a exercise, going into a room, if you're a coach or a PE teacher, giving some structure, but now saying you have creative license to fill in the blanks.
Wonderful. I love that.
And that would be a phenomenal exercise to see where they're at in their learning. And that's going to give you the feedback in where you need to take your teaching.
Yeah, I love that. Hey, I'm just trying to think, in the perfect world, you'd have to ensure everyone's inspired before you do that. Right. Because otherwise, you know, in today's day and age, kids would be like, nah, I'm just not going to do it. You know, I'll take a fail. Honestly, it's just this restlessness, I just get into my doldrums then on this there's so many unconscious movers who are bought into the therapeutic paradigm. I just know that if you gave quote unquote creative license to everyone, they would just be like, bah, you know, I found out ways for ChatGPT to do movement for me. You know, it'd be something like that.
I'm sure that that's coming. But even to the point of striving towards that discipline role model, I think being the reference point for health and fitness is such a great goal, because there is none. Like there isn't none. There are very few. And this probably speaks to, maybe correct me if I'm wrong, James, if you have, you know, siblings, mm-hmm. you know, if you're an older sibling and maybe you have all the tools, obviously, but even realizing as a peer how much influence you have on a younger person and striving towards being that reference point, because it does have an effect. It does have an impact. And more than you think. So striving towards taking on the responsibility and being conscious of those behaviors when you're coming into that setting. You know, like you said, you're walking in a few minutes late, you're holding a Rockstar energy drink. You know, what is that? What is that shot? Like, what is that saying indirectly?
Yeah.
And people can get on a high horse and it's like, oh, okay, well, yeah, life happens and this happens. But let's be better. Demand more.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes we're a little bit too soft in that regard, where we've got to call it out. We need to be better.
Yeah. Yeah. I call it criticize with care. Because you actually do care. You want everything to move forward. But I can't help but think, Daniel, I think of my I go pick Chloe up every day and I'm sitting there from like 10 minutes after 2 to 10 to 2:20, because you got to get in line, right, to make sure, you know, your vehicle's there so she could just walk out, you can leave. And every time I see the phys ed instructor who's doing some after school program and his assistant, and I see them walk by, and I just keep thinking, like, to your point, how do you create change though if you know that the current like 30, 40 year long march to what we see as physical education today in public schools is so rotten. Like it's so rotten in high percentages. You know, see, my point is like, because Daniel, just think about it. You know, I can tell you there's a huge percentage of parents who don't care what that coach does with regards to how they're perceived. Do you see what I'm saying? So how do you invoke this like million man, million woman march? How do you invoke that to get people excited, quote unquote, to go through education as a teacher, right? to go into movement education as a teacher, really thinking you're going to have any impact when 998,000 of all of the other ones that graduated are not even supposed to be there. And they're not disciplined role models. Do you see my point? Is like, so I do agree with you. I do agree with you that like, you know, just worry about yourself and like focus on that. But there is this kid, right? There's these kids that I care about, and that they do have this thing inside of them that needs to be invoked and a fire lit. And their parents are like, kind of okay with them just doing some movement. Do you see what I'm saying? But there's still a huge percentage of those teachers in those current positions. So this is why we went back, you know, Meva's previous episodes, we went back to like, well, what would take the whole house down is that you would force this 90-minute five times a week of free play. That would take the whole house down, right? And so I would ask people to, instead of that full deconstruction model, maybe work a little further over to the right as to what we're currently dealing with. You know, it just adds a little bit of spark of reality to your previous point on like, yeah, we'd want to have that happen, but man, it's pretty sad what it looks like today.
Yeah. So really getting those teachers, parents, policymakers, professionals to really capital B believe in the mission.
Yes.
And yes. I think that goes to anyone who complains or, you know, goes back to that article that you sent me about the crazy mental health issues in young people and the null hypothesis of, you know, just these younger generations. Isn't that really a mirroring of what they're seeing in older generations?
Totally.
Couldn't you? And so isn't that, well, I'm assuming, but surely that would be somewhat of a motivating factor to have a little time to self-reflect and say, these are the things that I'm seeing. These are the things that I'm putting out into the world. Maybe this is a point in which I can start to tilt myself towards these principles that I'm preaching.
Yeah.
So that the ripple effect is the younger people, the younger generations start to move towards that as well. And I think that discipline side of it, such an important thing that we're too easily pointing the finger and just going, oh God, these kids these days, where we're not taking that as feedback. It's like, well, where did they learn it? Let's use that as a reflection of what are these things and behaviors that I do that actually are basically directly mirroring, if not at a higher frequency, these characteristics in which I'm trying to steer young people away from. And how do I now tilt myself 1 degree closer or towards this beacon that I've set? And that's a great question. It's how do you motivate people to really believe in that as a mission and now start to have that 10, 20, 30 year uphill march towards making it a reality?
Yeah, well, I think your questioning does what may inspire a couple of people. And I also think that it does start with them, you know, and I never hesitate on using the word, they got to believe. Like, you got to believe in it, because you're not going to, you know, you're definitely not going to find evidence of some like quasi Montessori style movement program that elicited all these like free movers, right? Thousands of them. You're not going to find that. So, you know, it has to start with you. That's why I made these things so coaches could at least start with. And that's why I like this practice, because I'm already, you know, I'm upgrading it in regards to what a disciplined role model means. You know, I need to like explain that in much more detail. Maybe I need to have a LearnRx program of youth physical activity part 2 that explains what does character mean? You know, what do you want as character? How do you as the coach build your own character, right? Your reflection is very real and unfortunate with regards to the mental health, you know, depending upon how you see it, mental health crisis. I totally agree with you, which is in some rooms, a third rail argument. And possibly it is a good setup for us for future episodes, Daniel, as to the reflection of that. But I totally agree with you. It's one aspect of why it is the way it is, which is adults in large part are giving off this idea that it's really important how others perceive me and what my identification is, besides what I think my identification is. What do you think a 9-year-old is going to do with that? Like you can't even comprehend, right? If millions of people, your media says it, your sports personality says it, your pastor said, like everyone's like, it's about how you're perceived. And it's all inside of this disgusting cesspool called social media that we all, you know, we're scared shitless of talking about the downside effect of that, right? I'm just layering on your points of like, that's a real observation, right? So how do you do that? And I'll just be very quick with it because I can speak to it because I practice this. You know, in that setting, if you're an adult with other people in a movement experience, you're going to tell them to do this because you can. You don't do it because you're going to tell others about it on social media. Do you see that? That just stops the room. Quietness just pulls out over everyone because all those young minds are like, what? I thought all I ever did in everything I do was to share with my friends on social media. And you're basically saying, no, that's got nothing to do with it. Right. So again, that does tie into the why we're so surprised. Oh, mental health issues are so problem. Yeah, we're extremely restless because we have this perception that we need to show everyone what we're doing. You know, and everyone's in on it. Right. We're all captured by it. So, to the fourth point, we got to bleed, do it because we're just capable of doing this. Right. Not to show your friends, not to, you know, Instagram on the way out of blood on your hands. Like, it doesn't matter. It matters not whatsoever. So give that off as an adult. Right. Be an adult, you know, have great character. And when you bring in that character, what I mean by that, and again, I was trying to give them like something to go on. So in case an adult's listening, I'm not even sure what you're saying. Leave your phone at home. Mm. Don't bring it to class. Don't be a role model of your head stuck down on your Twitter feed to see what's happening politically in between sets that the kids are doing in the movement room. Do you see, like, yeah, don't get caught in that. Don't get captured for it. Now that's
a fourth rule.
Get out of.
That's a really good one because that's number four. Do it because they can, and it really is that perception is driving the intention behind fitness. And a great exercise, if you're posting about a workout or you're putting something up on social media, that's just a no other way to call it. Just a self-promotional act. It's just stop before you hit publish and just ask yourself, who is this for?
Yeah. Why am I doing it?
Why? Like, you're taking time out of your day to record something to post to your friends, but why? And do you think anyone really cares? That's probably something quite mean to say, but I think if you sit with that for even, you know, another minute or two, you kind of come to the conclusion that it's really quite bizarre. It's really quite bizarre that you would do that. It could be me, but
no,
it's just bizarre.
Oh, man. I'm kind of giggling because I'm thinking about the amount of times that I've had people in front of me when I told them that. Besides a small percentage of them, like taking down their whole life, right? They're like, I don't know, you know, but anyways, I'm laughing because all the things that they come up with that validates why they need to do it. That's what ends up happening. And no one, again, there's going to be a number of people who will stop listening right now because they can't deal with the honesty that they have to deal with when they wrestle with that question that you just proposed, right?
And
that's why I say do it because you can, because this is where you'll end up. I call it a sweeter side. It's a much sweeter side. What do I mean by that? I mean that you're going to discover that you're doing this and you're giving this off as an adult, you're doing it for the right reasons. Now, if you're like, well, I'm scared of a lack of accountability, I would much rather you discover that. I'm not scared of the nihilistic road that you will take. I'm not scared of that. And I do know that's not going to end up in like, you know, suicidal ideation or self-harm or anything like that. No, no. It's a long, hard road, but there's truth at the end of that dark tunnel in which you're going to be like, you know what? I need to figure out how to do this because I'm capable of doing it. And for no one else, for no one else. And that's what I'm telling you. It's a much sweeter side if you give it time. Now, to back up, how do we get a whole ton of people on board with that? That's why I was giggling. It is very, very difficult for the current cesspool that we are forced to live in.
Yeah, it's going to take a little more meditation.
Well, that's why I get excited about the things we discussed of like, be the change of things that are right next to you, right? So I feel when I have these discussions or I talk about like the big collective things, I do feel sad, right? Because I'm realistic in terms of change and impact and et cetera, right? But when I go home and I see my girls and I spend time with my wife, I feel better. I do, because it's right next to me. So if anyone gets inspired on that, you can feel better by just taking care of your own. And when I say that, it doesn't mean like, stay off my lawn. I don't want to help anyone besides what's next to me. No, I don't mean that, but it'll at least give you inspiration of helping what's closest to you. But from my point of Hannah with the pull-ups situation, it'll bleed outwards. It bleeds out, because then they will end up becoming role models for their friends, right? They'll start talking about those things, right? Like Hannah had conversations with her friends on a trip to Europe she just got back from on, you know, she made a great, aha moment recognition with them, that she was like, Dad, they didn't know what I meant by real food. And I was like, well, that's fantastic. You know, that's an opportunity for learning, correct? And she's like, yeah, I guess, but I was just surprised that they couldn't like capture what I meant by that, you know? So anyways, my whole point being is that don't think that just by working as to what's next to you is not going to help bleed out a possible movement, right? To end up making some change.
Yeah. I think as just an accountability tool, going back to do it because they can, do it as well for adults and big people, do it because you can. And if yes, you're doing it for any other reason, and yeah, you have to really spend time and maybe go to somewhere you don't necessarily like the answers.
Yeah.
But if you're doing it for anyone other than yourself, or you're doing it in order to move further away from something, let's say from being overweight or anything like that, instead of it being something that you do that moves you closer to an aim, a beacon that you're striving towards, that should be a little red flag that I may not have the correct intentions here. And that may just uncover a few little things, a few little seeds to, you know, spend more time on and unpack and understand. Because then you can start to see how someone else might be interpreting that, or the messages that might be being picked up from that, especially if you're a coach or spending a lot of time with young people in a health and fitness setting.
Yeah. I was just about to think that notion there may hurt to give people a heads up. If you're a sport coach, or if you're in the sport performance paradigm, you know, if people are not picking it up, you know, that is a very difficult notion right there, because to pull the do it because you can into the sport specific setting, you know, there's gonna be a lot of trouble you're gonna deal with there, right? Because imagine trying to explain to that young kid or to that young kid's parents, right? Imagine trying to explain to them, listen, we're just out here like running around on a grass pitch in the sun, right? Mm-hmm. The kid is gonna be like, what? We're here to win, coach, you know? or I'm here to get a scholarship. Do you see what I'm saying? So, you know, in the free movement world or in the broken schooling situation, I agree with you, but just be cautious of that. Like, let's just call it Daniel, you know, invoking or downloading to these people this five-step approach, right? I wouldn't start with the whole free mover autonomy thing. Do it because you can right away. Start with some intentions of, I don't even know how to start with it, but anyways, you get my point.
No, I think then moving to making it memorable, I think as coaches, we get stuck on, you know, the continuum of how someone or a young person is meant to progress, especially let's say in a weight room. And I think how to make it memorable is, yeah, provide the structure, but let them take the lead in terms of where they want to take it. And a good example is I work with this young person and very, very new to any sort of exercise or movement, very hard to engage, very low attention span, can't sit still. So trying to do anything kind of structured is very challenging. Comes to me one day and him and his buddies are doing a bench press competition. Now the coach in me is saying, well, I know you can't string 5 push-ups together, so I'm not going to put you under a barbell. But then I had to sit back and think, well, this is the most engaged I've ever seen this person in a gym setting. So why would I pull him away from this thing that he's actually probably going to do when I'm not there anyway? So what did we do? We set up a barbell, unloaded. We talked about the technical side of the movement. And he'd obviously been doing a ton because he was like, yeah, 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 whatever. Yeah, I can do this. Yeah, yeah. We just spoke about it for a few minutes, just so at least I could give him some sort of context around how do we perform this movement safely. Here's the things that we need to think about. And then I just peppered in because all he wanted to do was bench press to reach his best mate had hit like 135 pounds on the bench press. And he was going to do anything that it took to beat his mate. And so, okay, let's discuss this, but let's also pepper in some things around why we might want to do other types of movements like a squat. And he literally said, oh, but won't that, if I deadlift, won't that like blunt my gains? And I was like, wow. So it's like, okay, well, let's talk about, you know, and it just, and now he's asking me 100 more questions than he's ever had. And instead of me trying to resist him going, oh no, well, you're not ready to bench press. It's like, let's just lean in here. And he loved it. He had so much fun. He's, you know, and I think just using that as a bit of a structure where it's, if you want to make it memorable, give the structure and of course, take the necessary precautions to make sure they're safe and not doing anything crazy, but let them take the lead in terms of where they're wanting to take it and where their interests are and where their curiosity is.
Yeah, I love it. Because that's a specific example right there of, you know, what we call like longer conversations and spending time with people and discuss, you know, creating a space for competency, right? So I agree with you on the back end of what I said that, you know, it's very difficult to like rearrange or reorganize a whole bunch of people's minds. I totally agree. But what can happen is listen to Daniel's specific example there is that he just took time to create a space of education as opposed to just being like, you know, because you know, it's one of the reasons why I've worked further and further away from the fitness industry is just not having the time to like do that with a million people, right? So instead, I just, you know, I'm a contrarian pessimist critique person of fitness, and then I'll just allow the chips to fall where it may. But people like you are giving that hope to other coaches of like, take time, right? Sure, you're not going to just be like, oh, that's stupid because you're not doing deadlift or whatever. No, but see what the kid got out of that is that because they were honest and vulnerable in making that statement, Daniel, right? Like, oh, a deadlift is going to lose my gains. You now get to go, oh, here's an opportunity for an upgrade in their knowledge, right? Here's an opportunity. So you see, that would never have happened if you were just like, dude, you can't do 5 push-ups. Why are you doing bench? Do you see that? Because that's all the time that a lot of people have, you know, who are the purists thinking about shoulder, you know, injuries, et cetera. But you're taking it from this, like, well, it's positive, you know, they're doing movement. I do know some background information, but let's give it a little space here. And you give it space, and all of a sudden you're like, aha, you actually have no knowledge whatsoever. This is good to know, you know? Did you know that there's a chemical nuance to deadlifting that helps bench press? Did you know there was a hormonal nuance that is improvement in a deadlift that helps people's bench press? Did you know that there's a pulling action that's an opposing mechanical pulling action that helps bench press? You know what I'm saying? Like, you have all this opportunity now to explain to this kid. And now this kid now has this like secret knowledge, teach to learn, do it because you can, et cetera, that he leaves with, right? That he's like, you know, he's going to go tell someone else now. They're like, oh, they'll do deadlift because they lose gains on bench press. And he's like, well, actually, did you know that when you deadlift, you lift all this weight, which has a highest level of intent? I'm sorry, I'm getting caught in like what I love discussing and like all the nuances that a young kid could learn about. This is what I teach my girls about in different ways around why all the patterns are important, right? Because it's got nothing, I tell my girls, it's got nothing to do with your pecs. It's like his pecs are yours. It's got nothing to do with that, right? It's got to do with all the nuance complexities that are involved in full body resistance that leads to the highest order. So good for you for giving, number one, taking the time to do that with that kid, but also number two, to provide listeners an example of taking the slow game, which I don't have patience for.
Yeah. Well, you make it memorable and you nudge them closer to autonomy. And an inch up is up.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. What's your thoughts on this too? Because I just wrote down, you know, in what we, and this could get lengthy, but we won't make it that. But I was thinking, what are the things that you try to make memorable? And one of the things that if you were to take that question on, Daniel, like what would be the things that you would generally try to make memorable in most sessions? I try to invoke this knowledge of the concept of rate of progress. So I even like to teach young people the fact that, you know, older people like myself, you know, I'll give my example of my girls, you know, I tell them like the, you know, for you, I was telling Hannah, like, you know, you're using 15s now when you do this, but in probably like a couple of weeks, you're going to use 17 and a halves, right? And so she's connecting now, you know, 20 days, 17 and a halves, same repetition. So it's called rate of progress, right? And it gives this hope and this inspiration of this line that we talk about, right? But I also tell her that I'm not going up. So it is important for even that young mind to recognize this concept of rate of progress as a memorable thing that they leave with, because it's for them to then, because it also, in case you're not, you know, no one's picking up what I'm throwing down, it makes Hannah recognize patience, right? Like, leave a little bit on the table, because for the next session, you're going to have a little bit more and you're going to continue to do this. So I'm not sure what you think would be things that you like invoke to make it memorable for the sessions, but that's one. I love rate of progress concepts.
Yeah, I love that. And I kind of think of it, I'm going to use a gaming analogy, but let's say at the very start of a game, you have access to a map, but you only have visibility of a very small part of the map, like where you, and it basically is just the areas in which you've ventured to. And so the more that you venture out, the more visibility you have. So I kind of think of it as like, let's, you always come back to what you know and where you feel safe.
Yeah.
You would say it's that zone of proximal development where you've taken them into an unknown area in a very safe way. And maybe in that session, they've uncovered this new resource or this new area that yields a lot of like either aha moment or something that they go, I never knew that was possible, or I could do that, or I never knew that was a thing.
Yeah.
And they come back and now they're just, their brain's ticking over where they're thinking creatively, they're excited. And I just think of it as like hitting that zone of proximal development and taking them somewhere that they haven't been before and they didn't know, but now they go, wow, okay, I'm no longer scared of doing that. So you've got confidence. They're more willing and excited to go a little bit further next time. And even if it's, again, just a tiny amount, that if you've hit that note, you always make it memorable. Like I think I had an analogy last, I think it was with the same young boy. He was talking about gains and he was doing like lots of bicep curls. And I was like, okay, well, if you were looking at gains, you know, why that exercise? And it's like, oh, well, he's telling me this. And I was like, okay, well, and then going back to the deadlift and doing lower body, because he just is very apprehensive. And I was like, okay, what if you walk up to a pond and it's flat and you pick up a pebble and you throw a pebble into the pond? Like, what's the ripple effect? It's quite small. It's like, okay, well, that could be like a dumbbell, like a bicep curl. You know, like you said, the lifting weights will have a number of different effects on bodily systems, you know, hormonal, muscular, neuromuscular, all this stuff. It's like, okay, if we're deadlifting, now imagine we have a boulder and we throw it in the pond. It's like, what's the ripples now? It's bigger. And he was like, oh, you know, he kind of connected the dots. It's like, so there's a time and a place, like this will be the effect of doing like a bicep curl, you know, a single joint exerciser versus doing a deadlift, which is going to have a much bigger ripple effect. You're using a lot more muscles. It's a multi-joint exercise. So you can see how different movements will have different effects. And it was just like, he kind of sat with it a little bit and then kind of connected the dots and was like, oh, okay, I get that. That makes sense.
Nice.
And I find when you kind of challenge that or you present it in a way that connects to something that they're interested in, because he's obviously interested in gains and whatever that is. So anything that uncovers this new resource that he can use and comprehend just gives him more confidence. He's more willing to push into that unknown area, you know, that be adventurous, like take a little bit more risk. And I think that is such a great thing, like a great feeling as a coach, where you've just like given them just a little bit more of all of those ingredients, because once that momentum starts rolling, it's just like, I don't need to do anything. I'm not pushing you uphill at all. I'm trying to keep up now.
Yeah, that's awesome. I picked up actually from your point initially in the story was also not only the concept of, you know, in mechanical terms, single joint in effect versus or dose response, right? Single joint versus multiple joint, et cetera, and getting them like, oh, aha moment. I also picked up there the fact that you're giving off this concept of, you know, don't be afraid to get tripped up and learn from it, right? So, meaning like veer out and go outside of that zone, right? And increase your buffer zone, but only increase it when you're solid with those base formula support, right? So as an example, someone hasn't captured the concept and knowledge and competency of lifting yet, right? We call bending, lifting, hip, whatever you want to call it, right? So for that person, are we going to give them free rein of this like educational competency of single joint, multi-joint, et cetera? Maybe not. Maybe that's not the steps. But what we do need to start with them is this concept of there is going to come a point where you're going to veer out and you're going to do a lifting movement or a bending movement that you're not going to do the best, right? But that's a trip up, right? You get tripped up and we're not going to make fun of you, right? And you're not going to get hurt, right? But you're going to learn that you got to come back to the basics. What's the basics? The knowledge of when you see lift on the picture on the wall, right? And then there's all these things as possibilities underneath it. So I picked up another thing based upon your story there of just not being afraid of going outside of your comfort zone and increasing your buffer, right? But still relying on the principles and repetition and consistency of those principles. And then it allows you to do an overhead toss of a rock, and not hit yourself on the head with it. Or when you're out hiking, to do some overhead tosses, which I did this past weekend. You know, I'm capable of doing that. Why? Well, I know I'm not going to throw it on my head, but I have earned the right to increase my buffer zone, right? But still, what is it called? It's called lifting. It's still the bending pattern. So I picked that up from your story. It was great. Thank you for the sharing of that.
No, and I think, you're not going to get that every time or every session, but like you said, I think you said it in the course, you want them to experience, fun, joy, challenge, sadness, pain, it's giving them the tools to experience these feelings and manage them and deal with them.
It's not always discomfort.
No,
it's not always discomfort, but don't be afraid of it. Like, I mean, you know, test the waters, right? And that's
it's
why
usually what's on the
only,
other side.
Not
of
only
that.
The suffering, right? It's not only the like, look at you guys. Like I used to love to do with people with the assault bike. Most times, just to teach a lesson. But it's not only that. But don't hesitate to do that. You know. And hope people picked up my words there too. Is that there has to be almost like a post rugby. I'll use your analogy of Ollie. Post rugby beer drinking, of course, not with young kids, but whatever that concept is, you need to all do that hard work, but then you need to all come together and recognize like no one is being made fun of here. No, we're not going to all joke about, oh, I remember you or you're throwing up and et cetera. No, we all come together and we all did that work together. And this is what we learned from it. And that can be a memorable situation too, right? Where you moved with other people as a group. That could be a positive idea, right? But just imagine that young kid who leaves that session as a memorable component where they're like, Mom, I really like worked my ass off today in this particular thing. And he says it in his own language and no one made fun of me, right? Imagine that kid, if they get like hundreds and hundreds of opportunities for that in a lifetime, you cannot tell me that you're not building a great human with those opportunities, you know.
Absolutely.
It's hopeful if we have that as a strategy.
No, definitely. And I think to wrap up again, this has been really great just to unpack and challenge some of these already great first principles. And I think, you know, if we go back one, teach to learn, it could also be teach and learn.
Yes.
So it's both.
Yes.
Discipline role model. And I think really that's just about really taking
the
time.
Teach to learn, the asterisk would be, sorry, teach to learn. And again, this is why we did this. I was fortunate to do it. Teach to learn is for everyone. Right. So like you said, it's reciprocity. Like everyone needs to be learning in this.
Exactly. It's not just the coach. I think discipline role model is self-explanatory and just requires people to push to somewhere they probably don't want to go instinctively and to really live your values, take on that responsibility and to not set expectations that you yourself are not willing to live and withhold. Like the social media thing, you know, why are you doing it? What's the intention behind this? Who's it for? What signaling is that? What signaling effect is that having? What message is that sending? Three, making it a family thing. I think that's self-explanatory. I think it comes back to that thing that we've spoken about, James, which is think global, but act local.
Yeah.
Still have those big thoughts, criticize bad ideas, but then come back and act that out at a small, you know, influencing just, you know, if it's just one person, if it's just your home, because that will have an impact on who your family members engage with. And it has that accumulative effect. So make it a family thing. Start it from within the home. Do it because
it's also an assessment. Sorry, Daniel, I forget. It's also an assessment of your intentions, right? So if you can't, you know, to use other pseudo intellectual concepts of like just cleaning up your own room or your own daily actions, right? If you can't get that straight, I'd be very cautious of jumping out and saying that, oh, I think this is the high road, right? If you don't think kids can't smell that, they can smell that. They know it. So I appreciate the family thing and discipline role model one that I need to expand upon, because we need to talk a lot about character and self-improvement there for the coach.
Yeah. And I think anyone who's really, you know, criticize bad ideas, but if you're criticizing big ideas, but aren't yet taking steps 1, 2, and 3 to fix some of the smaller issues that are happening locally.
Yeah.
You know, that's probably where you start before you start to go, because you're not going to have too much influence or impact when you're thinking from that perspective. Do it because you can. I think we covered that pretty thoroughly and at length and make it memorable. I think that's a really good framework in, again, finding that zone of proximal development, challenging young people to just explore what's around the corner, what's in this area that maybe I've been too afraid or haven't quite known how to tackle. Now they have, they can come away with some great resources. They have a greater reference point in terms of, you know, let's call it their personal map of development. And they're going to be far more confident, far more willing to take risks and venture out, which is, again, only going to yield positive results, again, if done safely, of course. So, James, I think we can keep refining that, and we definitely will. But in terms of a reference point for people who are going into, walking into that gym and who are going to be in contact with these young people, this is a great step one to ground yourself and help it guide behaviors when you go in and coach or teach or parent or whatever it is.
Yeah. And I hope people remember that. That was the idea of it. The intentions was to just invoke this. If I'm a person in charge and I have these young people in front of me, what are some things I can take in that I'm not going to have on a t-shirt or up on a board as commandments, but I have to have in the back of my head as the overarching, like, deepest intentions as to how I approach this thing. That was the whole concept of it. And if some people get something from it, then I think we're all better off for it.
Awesome. James, thank you again. And we'll see you on the next one.
Okay, buddy.